The companies that fly airliners predict a profitable 2008. The companies that build airliners aren't quite as bullish. And three naval aviators eject safely over the Persian Gulf. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, January 8, 2008. While economists keep talking about the U.S. housing slump, unemployment, impending recession, and record oil prices, the U.S. airline industry is talking about 2008 in optimistic terms. The Air Transport Association estimates the industry will make between $3.5 and $4.5 billion this year, completing the industry's first three consecutive profitable years since before 9/11. Reported profits were $5 billion in 2007 and about $3 billion in 2006. ATA's John Heimlich credits the cheerful financial outlook on a reduction in seats as carriers trim unprofitable routes, a 2-4% increase in demand, and added service to markets such as China and India, where airline passenger volume growth is far outpacing the U.S. Continued high fuel prices and an economic downturn in the U.S. could, however, force marginal operations and some regional carriers out of business. Another good year for the airline business will not necessarily mean another big year for Airbus and Boeing. Both manufacturers say their sales will settle back in 2008 from the frenzied levels of the past year, and their stock prices have both taken a hit. Aerospace stocks in general took a sharp drop on Monday, and the expected order slowdown is to blame. Forbes reports Airbus parent Eads saw its stock fall 1.55 euros, or about 2.28 in U.S. dollars, during afternoon trading in Paris on Monday. That's a drop of 7.5%. A Deutsche Bank analyst downgraded the stock to sell from hold, citing the expected fall in orders and a weakening global economy. Eads has also been the victim of the dollar's decline versus the euro. In the past 6 months, Eads shares have fallen over 20%. It didn't help when a German weekly cited statements from an Eads executive that there'll be another delay in the development of the troubled Airbus A400M military transport. On Wall Street, stock in Boeing fell $3.04, or 3.5%. Deutsche Bank rated Boeing a hold, saying stockholders shouldn't sell just yet, as there are likely a few short-term gains to be had as the 787 Dreamliner approaches its first deliveries. On Monday, the Navy rescued three of its aviators after what may have been a mid-air collision of two fighters over the Persian Gulf. The men were assigned to the USS Harry Truman and flying F/A-18E and F-model Super Hornets in close air support, following a Sunday incident in which the State Department says the carrier was buzzed by five small Iranian boats in the Straits of Hormuz. A Pentagon spokesman told the Newport Daily News the Iranian vessels showed potential hostile intent as they approached the U.S. Navy ships in a fast, reckless, and dangerous manner, but there was no actual engagement. All three pilots ejected safely before their planes went down in the Gulf on Monday. The incident is under investigation. Boeing's 787 Dreamliner has generated lots of great press for Boeing, and also a few PR headaches related to developmental delays. Now, a new concern has been expressed publicly by the FAA about the security of the Dreamliner's flight controls from outside attack, and it's prompting a debate within the industry and the general media. The problem stems from the fact that the Dreamliner takes fly-by-wire to a new level, using digital signals distributed throughout the plane. The FAA is concerned about all those ones and zeros traveling around the plane, mixing with the ones and zeros being passed by users of the plane's in-flight entertainment network. In other words, if a 13-year-old hacker in the Netherlands can bring your computer to a halt, what's to stop a hacker in seat 13B from taking control of a Dreamliner? To quote the FAA's document published in the Federal Register, quote, "Because of this new passenger connectivity, the proposed data network design and integration may result in security vulnerabilities from intentional or unintentional corruption of data and systems critical to the safety and maintenance of the airplane. The existing regulations and guidance material did not anticipate this type of system architecture or electronic access to aircraft systems that provide flight-critical functions," unquote. Boeing spokeswoman Lori Gunter told the tech website Wired.com that there are protections in place to ensure passenger internet services cannot access flight-critical systems, quote, "under any circumstance," unquote. Always trying to be helpful, Airbus has commented to the FAA. Boeing's rival says the special conditions imposed on the Dreamliner aren't high-level enough, and are open to too much interpretation. Airbus, which has its own mixed history with aircraft data systems integration, also notes that it would be impossible for Boeing or anyone to demonstrate complete security in a system like that because technology is constantly evolving. Up next on ANN, whatever happened to that trusted traveler program for frequent flyers we heard about? Russia wants in on Europe's plan to explore Jupiter. And China's business vocabulary adds the term hostile takeover. You're listening to Aero News.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 8, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. It's now been over a year since the U.S. government announced a trusted traveler program, allowing frequent business flyers to pay an annual fee to private security providers to pre-screen travelers to allow quick transit of security lines at airports. Business flyers, who are on the clock while they're waiting in line, welcomed that option. But so far, after a year, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer reports only a fraction of the country's airports offer the program. Notably, Seattle-Tacoma International Airport does not offer the service. One private provider, Clear, says the TSA has blocked strategies for streamlining the security process, nixing proposals for shoe scanning and biometric measures. Airlines also haven't all warmed to the idea. Continental operates Terminal C of Newark Liberty International Airport in New Jersey. The airline provides its own exclusive TSA security line for members of its elite program and is kept Clear out so it won't compete with Continental. Fortunately for those who want the option, Clear has reached 85,000 total subscribers and is now turning a profit on its operation at Orlando International Airport. As Russia rebuilds its space exploration program from the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, the government has announced it will participate in the European Space Agency's upcoming plans to explore Jupiter between 2015 and 2025. The Interfax news agency quoted the head of the Space Research Institute, Lev Zelyony, as saying that the moon Europa, where water has been detected beneath a thick layer of ice, holds particular interest. Russia wants to land a spacecraft in one of the fissures in Europa's icy crust, then melt some ice and look for signs of life in the water. Zelyony says, quote, "Where there is an ocean, life could arise. In this respect, after Mars, the Europa satellite is probably the most intriguing place in the solar system," unquote. Last October, in more evidence of its space research renaissance, Moscow signed a deal with Washington to provide NASA with instruments for scanning the moon and Mars for water. As China's communist regime struggles to embrace some elements of capitalism, the Chinese people will have to learn some new vocabulary. This week's lesson is hostile takeover, which for the first time in a long time in China has a non-military definition. China East Airlines, owned in part by the government, has been losing money, and Singapore Airlines has offered to buy a stake in the company worth $923 million U.S. Late on Sunday, Air China, which itself is wholly owned by the government, told China East shareholders that if they would vote down the offer from Singapore, Air China would buy the same stake for 30% more. Another new wrinkle in the new semi-capitalist Chinese paradigm is a question of whether the Air China consolidation proposal could win regulatory approval. The new limits on monopolies in Chinese corporate law suggest probably not. But then Air China is owned by the government, and Air China chairman Li Zhisheng was appointed a few days ago to head the commission which would have to approve his own airline's takeover bid. China East stockholders vote today on the original Singapore Airlines bid. No matter how it turns out, it'll be fun to watch. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers is calling on the U.S. Department of Commerce to suspend a new program that allows companies in China to gain expedited access to sensitive U.S. aerospace technology, including telecommunication and composites technologies with potential military applications. IAM President Tom Buffenbarger notes, quote, it is naive to assume that relaxing export restrictions on sensitive aerospace technology does not represent a significant threat to U.S. jobs, companies, and communities. It is equally naive to ignore the national security implications of such technology transfers to China. The Boeing Hexcel Avic 1 joint venture will involve work on the Boeing 787 program that could have been performed by U.S. workers. We find it very difficult to believe that your actions are good for U.S. workers or the U.S. economy, unquote. That joint venture also concerns the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control, an independent research foundation that monitors the spread of arms technology. Quote, reducing control on exports to such companies increases the risk that American goods will help China improve its armed forces and that American goods will be sent illicitly to Syria or Iran, unquote. The Wisconsin report also noted that Boeing and Hexcel have been cited in the past for multiple violations of export controls. Still ahead, a Florida aviation legend has gone west. A stranded British fishing crew calls the U.S. Air Force for help. And what is NASA doing flying balloons over Antarctica? You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation, the Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, January 8, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Aero News has learned of the passing of a true legend. Owen H. Gassaway Jr. didn't make his name in the aviation community by flying planes, but rather by managing and servicing them, and by making a well-known airport what it is today. Gassaway started his career working as an aircraft mechanic at Morrison Field, known today as Palm Beach International Airport in Florida, and maintained Civil Air Patrol subchasers based there. He enlisted in the Army during World War II, serving as a tank driver and mechanic. In 1948, he founded Florida Air Motive at nearby Lantana Airport. The South Florida Sun Sentinel reports the company sported a 23-plane DC charter fleet, and for a number of years was the largest Beechcraft distributor in the nation. Under Gassaway's leadership, Lantana grew from little more than a dot on the map to one of the premier general aviation airports on the East Coast. To honor his service, the Lantana Terminal bears his name, the Owen H. Gassaway Aviation Center. While officially known as Palm Beach County Park Airport these days, the airport is still more often called Lantana and still goes by the designator LNA. Owen H. Gassaway Jr. succumbed to complications of a staph infection in late December at the age of 83, with his children and his wife of 63 years, Alice, at his hospital bedside. The British fishing vessel, the Argos Georgia, and its 25-man crew were in a real bind. The ship suffered engine failure while negotiating ice off the Ross Ice Shelf on Christmas Eve, New Zealand time. The ship was frozen in the ice floe with no power. Having exhausted other options, the ship's owner sought help from the U.S. Air Force. Lieutenant General Lloyd Utterback, 13th Air Force and Joint Task Force Support Forces, Antarctica's Operation Deep Freeze commander, recalled, quote, considering the unforgiving Antarctic climate, we recognize the potential for this to become a life-or-death situation, unquote. And so, in an 11-hour mission, a C-17 Globemaster III and crew launched from Christchurch, New Zealand, and airdropped about 150 pounds of supplies abeam the Argos Georgia. The ship's owner, Argos Georgia Limited, provided the spare parts and flotation aids. Lieutenant Colonel Jim McGann, 304th Expeditionary Airlift Squadron commander, noted, quote, this is what we train for, what we're experts at. It's a challenging mission, but this capability is inherent in the C-17 and epitomizes the global reach concept, unquote. Operation Deep Freeze is a unique joint and total force mission that annually supports the National Science Foundation and U.S. Antarctic program that began in 1955. Due to ongoing support for ODF, the McCord crew is a highly experienced Antarctic airdrop qualified team. NASA and the National Science Foundation have achieved a new milestone in conducting scientific observations from balloons by launching and operating 3 long-duration flights within a single Antarctic summer. David Gregory, assistant chief of NASA's balloon program at Wallops Flight Facility in Virginia, says achieving the record is noteworthy, but, quote, of greater significance is the increase in science that can be accomplished with only a modest increase in cost to the program, unquote. Unique atmospheric circulation over Antarctica during its summer months allows scientists to launch balloons from a site near McMurdo Station, the Foundation's logistics hub in Antarctica, then recover them from nearly the same spot weeks later. Scientists from the United States, Japan, South Korea, France, and other countries are using the balloons to investigate the nature of ultra-high-energy cosmic rays and to search for antimatter. The polar vortex, a persistent low-pressure system above the Antarctic continent, helps keep the balloons aloft for up to 6 weeks. The payloads average over 2 tons each and could spend almost 90 days of near-space flight at an average altitude of 23 miles. This allows for long and continuous observations of a variety of phenomena from a single instrument at a fraction of the cost of launching a satellite into space. Once the balloon flights are completed, the payloads will be retrieved, brought back to McMurdo, then returned to the U.S., where they can be refurbished and launched again, also an advantage over your typical space satellite. And finally, with the centennial hubbub surrounding the Wright brothers' first flight at Kitty Hawk now subsiding, we're happy to report good news surrounding another aviation first, the first officially observed powered flight over 1 kilometer. That milestone was achieved over a vineyard near Hammondsport, New York, in the Finger Lakes region, by the Wright brothers' arch rival, Glenn H. Curtiss. Curtiss is also known as the father of naval aviation, in honor of his development of the first seaplane. But the section of Keuka Lake shoreline where he conducted his early seaplane test flights today is an abandoned rail line covered by a mass of overgrown brush. Hammondsport residents voted down a bond measure to buy and restore the property in Curtiss's honor, but there is a happy ending. 2 anonymous donors contributed $900,000, and the property owner lowered his sale price to match that to allow the land to be purchased. Volunteers will begin work in the spring to clear the land, install a few benches, clear a few trails, and create a low-key, 11-acre Glenn Curtiss Memorial Park. That first flight over a kilometer took place on July 4, 1908, and the park should be ready for the centennial. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, I'll talk with Judy Rice, Executive Director of Careers in Aviation. If you made a New Year's resolution to start an aviation career, here's where you start. And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our AeroCast. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.